Hello. We're chosen two speakers this evening to share NA message of strength, hope, and recovery. Our first speaker is a dedicated home group member, Lauren Kay.
Hi everybody, I'm Lauren, I'm an addict. Wow, what a treat. I have to say, I was quite amazed tonight when I came in and I thought, I was here at 10 of 7 and I thought, now nobody's going to be here until about 7:30. And so there was going to be just a few people helping out, setting up chairs, and when I saw about 40 or 50 people out front, I was like, oh my God. So, we'll have to see how it goes tonight. I have to say that, one of the things that I really love about this group, and we used to talk about it at the beginning of every home group meeting, was, are we effectively carrying the message to the addict who still suffers? And that to me is like, it's one of the most important things in my heart today. And it was something that kind of, I guess I just remember when I first came around, the idea of like helping another addict just seemed like something I heard people talking about, and something that I kind of understood was like connected to this idea of getting out of yourself. And for me, it was something that before I had any idea what the steps were, like connected me to something that was bigger than myself. It made me feel like I had a purpose when I first got here that I didn't really feel ever before in my life. And I think that one of the things that really got me about this group was that they had a focus on carrying the message that I really liked. I just have to tell a story first about how I found this meeting. And that was, I moved to Philadelphia about 7 years ago, and thanks to the confusion on the internet and the various meeting list that I found, I kept arriving to meetings, and I would arrive there and there would be no meeting there, or it would be closed, and I was so frustrated because I couldn't get a person on the helpline on the phone. And finally I just kept pressing the buttons and leaving messages, and I finally got Carl, who's one of our home group members, on the phone. I didn't know who he was at the time, but I was losing my mind. Because I had just moved here, I was totally stressed out, and I was thinking, oh my God, here I am in Philadelphia, and there is no NA. I just seemed like, and I know that there's a lot of meetings everywhere, and I've had an opportunity, luckily, to experience that. But Carl said, listen, where do you live? And I told him, and he said, you just need to drive down Germantown until you see them all, and go in there. He said, there's a meeting tonight. It was actually the Saturday night meeting. He said, there's a meeting tonight, I think it was at 11 o'clock or 10:30 or something. So I did that, and oddly enough, it was like in January, and it was the Saturday night celebration for this meeting. And they had like 150 people in here, and they had a clean time countdown. And I was like, oh my God, thank God, And ever since there, I've been coming to this meeting ever since. But I guess I just want to back up a little bit and talk about my story, because I just think that for me, just like Dave was talking about, that difference between powerless over drugs versus powerless over addiction, that to me, I look back at my story, and I was an addict long before I ever picked up drugs. I stole things from people when I was, a little kid, but I didn't steal things for like material gain. I stole things because they made me feel better about myself. I remember one of the things I stole at an early age, I went over to a friend of mine's house to spend the night, and I stole his brother's trophy. And I thought to myself, it's going to make me feel better about myself to be able to like tell people that I won this trophy. I was not like somebody. So long before, and not only that, before I ever used it, I was stealing from just about everybody I knew. And I grew up in a house where everybody was dishonest and everybody drank and used drugs, or at least my parents did, and all their friends did. So, but, for me, I'd have to say that I was a shy little kid. I didn't like to be with people. That, you know, I suffered, as I still do today, from a disease of loneliness and isolation. And one of the things about this program is it's given me an opportunity to find a solution to that problem, you know, which I never had before. When I was a kid, if given a choice of doing anything by myself, I would have chosen it over being with people. And I always knew that there was something wrong with me. You know, I grew up in a house, you know, just like a lot of people did, where it's just, you know, there's lots of drinking, and both my parents were alcoholics, and we were told to be dishonest with people, don't tell people what's going on around the house, you know, I was told to, like, carry on an air that everything was okay, and so, to me, I knew that there was something wrong with me, and I knew there was something wrong with the family I grew up in. And when I tried, I guess my first drug was probably alcohol, but when I tried alcohol for the first time, it seemed like it gave me a freedom that I never thought I would know. A freedom to be able to relate with some people, and the same was true with drugs. And only that with drugs, you know, all the drugs that I tried, and I tried everything I could get, you know. You know, I was indiscriminate. But it gave me, like, a connection to the other people that I was with that I just didn't know how to connect to before. That, like to me, to get and use and find and ways and means to get more also had to do with, like, somehow feeling like a part of something else that wasn't me. It was really my only way of, like, meaningful way of connecting with people. And that was, you know, that was painful because it was like, basically what happened was I threw myself wholeheartedly into my disease as if it was the only thing that I had in my life. And it really was. It was really the only, you know, all of my hobbies that I had when I was a little kid. And I loved to fish, and I loved to go outdoors, and I loved to camp, instantly went by the wayside. And I turned into an angry and a violent little kid. And everything from being mean to people around me to being mean to animals and things like that, all the things that I loved, just I became the opposite of that. In high school, in addition to dealing drugs and getting involved in things, I pretended to have this air that I was an honest person, but I stole from everybody who gave me the chance. And usually went undetected, but on a few key points in time, I got busted, and one of which was when I stole a large quantity of a particular drug from my best friend, and got caught. And got caught by all my peers. They all organized a search of my room, and I exiled myself. I completely took myself out. I said, you know what, I just don't want people in my life anymore. And for me, I had my own contacts on the outside, and I just threw myself completely into the drugs and the drug world. And that happened, I tried to go to a couple of colleges. I basically failed out because I couldn't make class. I got into dealing drugs at various levels. And then when a friend of mine got busted and he turned on me and I thought I was going to go to prison, I got into a situation with some people who I'd been working with who decided not to pay me. And on two occasions I went over to this person's house threatening him with with several of my friends. And on one of those occasions I had taken a big bottle of pills beforehand. And I was so messed up, and I was convinced that the only way to turn the situation around successfully was to shoot this guy. And I went over there at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I remember him begging and crying and screaming while I held the gun to his head. And I remember feeling like I was a spineless jerk for not being able to pull the trigger. And that was where my addiction led me to. Well, shortly after that, I left town. And things didn't get any better. You know, I just went from place to place, And you know, every morning I'd start out with my handful of pills and I'd start drinking. And there came a point in time where I just looked at my life and I said to myself, you know, every person that I've ever come in contact with, I've either hurt or they've ended up hurting me badly, you know. And it applied equally with my family, to all of my acquaintances. And it became clear to me that, like, you know, and I guess I've always considered myself a thinking person, but like that the only reasonable thing to do was for me to take me out of the picture, you know. But I just couldn't seem to like function anymore. And I would wake up every morning and I'd sit in this chair and I'd take a handful of pills with a loaded revolver and a pistol next to me and I'd try to get the courage to shoot myself in the head. And usually what would happen was that I'd sit there and go, you know, I'm just going to see if it gets better, you know. And I'd do the same thing day after day and day after day. And lo and behold, it didn't get much better, you know. Lo and behold, starting out my day like that every day, you know, just led to another day of trying to like find enough drugs to get through the day and, you know, getting in accidents with my car and then, you know, and lots of bad things. And at any rate, one day, in this kind of routine that I was in, I had the brilliant idea in that state that if I shot myself right here, that I would probably die, but that if I didn't, my life would be changed forever. And for some reason, in that moment, it seemed like a totally rational thought. And I did. Needless to say, I didn't die. I guess, you know, I woke up about a week later in critical care in a hospital. One of my family's friends found me. I woke up in delirium tremens. Very bad withdrawal from the barbiturates that I was taking and all the alcohol. And the first thing they did was, you know, I swatted at flies and bats and things in my hospital bed, was they put me on Thorazine and Valium, you know, to try to calm down my thoughts. And they decided, because of the way I was talking, that I must be a schizophrenic. Well, that seemed all right to me at the time, you know. I was like, you know, I'll take some of that, you know. And the next thing I knew, I was, well, what do I got to do to get more of this, you know. And I realized that all I had to do was keep talking funny and keep acting a little, you know, mad and deranged. And the next thing I knew, I found myself in a security psychiatric institution. And I spent actually a couple of years there. It's, you know, it's really unfortunate because, you know, at that time, I think, you know, medicine, you know, I quibble with some of my friends who work in the field because I have a lot of hard feelings toward the psychiatric and the institution as a whole because they, you know, they misdiagnosed me as a schizophrenic, and I spent a couple of years not only in an institution but much of that time in, you know, a little padded cell and some of that time in a straitjacket. And because one of the things about me, and I know it was interesting, last week we read a story in this meeting in the back of the basic text, and it was about, I think that the certain title of the story is called No Reason for Loneliness. And in it, you know, woman, you know, her story is remarkably similar to my own. But, you know, she talked about, like, when she would go into blackout, she would get violent and angry, and things would happen to her that she didn't understand. And to me, that was me. Like, I would wake up at parties, and they're like, man, what happened last night? And I'd be like, well, I don't know. And it's like, you pulled out a gun, and you were firing a shot. I'd be like, no way. You're not talking about me, you know. I couldn't believe it. I remember one time I woke up, and I had been arrested the night before, and I had this, like, stack of tickets on my table. And I read through the things, and they were, like, violent, combative, abusive. And I was like, man, who are they talking about? You know, this is not me, you know. I couldn't believe that that was me, you know. But lo and behold, when I was in a psychiatric institution, that's what started to happen. But I started becoming more and more angry, and I started becoming more and more violent. And it's the strangest thing. I tell this story only because I've heard other people with a similar story here, you know. And as well, because everybody says, oh, it's not me, it's not me. But, you know, I don't consider myself different from anybody here, you know. But what happened to me was that I was just an addict doing what addicts do. And and I was doing whatever it took to get my next fix. I just happened to be in a hospital. And what happened to me was that at one point it became too late, you know, that all of a sudden I was in real trouble. And if it wasn't for my belligerence and nature and my resistance to authority, I don't know whether I would have ever got out of there. They're telling me that I was going to need to be locked in a psychiatric institution and on heavy medication for the rest of my life while I was there. And I spent a couple years there, and during that time I got more and more violent. Well, one time I cut myself out of a straitjacket with a window nail, and I did some serious damage to myself. And they said, you know what, we can't even handle you here. We're going to take you down to a place in Washington, D.C. that specializes in cases like yours. Well, when I got there, they said, you know what, looking at your chart, I don't think you've ever been a day in your life without drugs. So the first thing that we're going to do here is we're going to take you off these medications and see what happens. You know? Well, lo and behold, after about 3 or 6 months of slowly weaning myself off these medications, I became a pretty, pretty normal guy. You know, and over the course of a couple months, you know, I kept saying, you know, because at one point I'd been forward to go to meetings. I think I need to go to meetings. I think I need to go to meetings. They're like, no, you know, you need to just sit tight. You need to sit tight. Well, I saved up nickels that I used to get in the change from the soda machines. They would sometimes ask for them back, but sometimes they wouldn't. And over the course of, you know, 8 months or so, I'd saved up like $5, $6 worth of change. And the first opportunity I got, I broke out of this place. And the first place I went was the liquor store. And after that, I went downtown, and I manipulated some blind guy with a whole bunch of money. And the next thing I knew, I couldn't remember a thing, but I woke up back in the hospital again. So, and this time they said, you know, it's time for you to go to meetings. And so when I first started going to meetings, I actually had to go with a nurse or a security guard right next to me when I went to meetings. And, you know, it actually, you know, I had to say that this is when things started going, getting better for me. You know, I heard people in the meetings that I would go to, well, first of all, I have to say, you know, at that point, for the first time in my life, I actually did have a doctor that cared about me and wanted to understand what recovery was all about. And that really, for the first time, helped me to get a real connection with somebody. But the other thing I remember was hearing people talking about spirituality at meetings. And I have to say that was the thing that I would hear at meetings when I got court ordered to go to meetings, and I'd think, that is ridiculous. You know, I just couldn't buy into this whole thing. It just seemed to me, from my life experience, that there was just no way there was a God that made life go right. Because all I saw was injustice in the world, you know. But I did see that the people that I thought were doing the best in meetings had a sense of spirituality in their life, and they made it clear in their actions, you know. And one of the things he told me, and I have to say, this guy wasn't particularly nice to me, but he was somebody who I admired and all, you know, a lot. And one of the things he said was, besides, you know, when I asked him to sponsor me, he said, well, I want you to read the basic text twice, cover to cover, and then ask me again. But the second, when I talked to him about spirituality, he said, well, what worked for me was to find a special place and go to it every day. And you could pray and just be quiet and do whatever. Well, for me, that place was on the way back to the psychiatric institution. It was this beautiful field that I had to walk through every night. And there was this hill going up to the institution where I was. And I would sit on this hill, which had tall grass, and I'd look out over this field. And at the very far end of the field, there was this light. And I just talked out loud. And most of the time when I talked, I had to say, I talked thinking that this is the stupidest thing I ever had to do. You know, I would sit there and go, you know, I cannot believe I'm doing this. I don't know why. You know, it's just dumb. You know? But, you know, I did it. And that, like, looking back on that, because I remained in this institution, and I remained going back and forth, and I didn't believe it was going to help me. But after about 6 months of doing this, I saw some remarkable changes in my life. For the first time, people in meetings were actually calling me up in a psychiatric institution and asking me for help with some of their problems. I started seeing things in that field, and I know I've talked about my homegrown members have probably seen this. I've probably heard me talk about this. But you know, I used to see foxes jumping around the fields and, you know, feeding on the little mice, and I always knew the phases of the moon, and I was there long enough so I could actually start seeing changes in the season and things like that. Things that I had totally forgotten about in my addiction. And I must say that was like my first spiritual awakening in this program. I really felt like something happened to me that I just didn't understand and that I would have never guessed was going to happen to me. And in that time, things started going pretty well in my life, you know. I started going to a class at a local college. I did well. I would have to say, I put my heart and soul into that guy. I had a job as a cashier at the store, the psychiatric institutions, and I made $3 an hour, and I was very happy to have it. I remember the toughest time. Oh, and I love to tell this business. I had a sponsor who I don't think is clean today while I was in the psychiatric institution. He was going through a divorce in his life, and he was going through some very tough times. And on Thanksgiving, the last year that I was in the institution, he got me out on pass, and we went to a reservoir, and we sat by the reservoir and ate turkey subs. Wow. I have to say, that was a beautiful moment in my life. Because I didn't think that kind of stuff was ever going to happen to me again. You know, I didn't think like that I was going to have a license, I guess. You know? So I have to say, you know, it's funny because when people said, you know, they'd like me to share tonight, and I said, no, what do I have to share? You know, my life just goes along these days. I've been clean for 18 years. I've got some advanced degrees in college. I'm working toward a doctorate. I work in the Caribbean on coral reefs. I do things that I'm interested in. I travel. I've got a wife and a family, like most people, you know. But, you know, for me, like when I look back at that, a couple weeks ago I shared in a psychiatric institution, and I used to avoid them like the plague because I hated the sound of the bars locking behind me, you know. When I saw them all shuffling in, you know, and on their meditations, and I thought to myself, oh my God, there I was, you know. And here I was thinking that my life isn't so good, you know. Because, you know, it's so easy to forget about that stuff. It's so easy to forget about that stuff. I have to say, and I know I probably talk longer than my allocated time, but I have to say, one of the, you know, obviously besides home group, which I am like a total advocate. Like, it's so important to plug into whatever group you do and get to meetings. But I also think for me, sponsorship has been, I wish I was a better sponsee than I am. I feel like sponsoring is like the thing that's made me feel like so connected, because I have such a hard time reaching out to people, and I've got sponsees all over the country, you know, and they call me all the time. And like, in my head, I've got little places for everybody, you know? And it makes, it's what helps me so much, besides going to meetings, like, to feel like I'm getting out of myself, and like I'm giving back what I'm supposed to be giving back. You know, I wish I could do more than I do, you know? But it's like, to me, like, my life is full today, and I feel very busy. And I can't tell you how much I owe it all to this program. And I really thank everybody for showing up tonight. Thank all the home team members too for making such a special event happen. So thanks a lot.
Thanks for sharing, Lauren. That's what we do, man. We get better.